Hello, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 104, also known as The Morning After. And I have, against my better judgment, brought back with me James, John, and Greg. And actually, not surprisingly, in the turmoil of episode 103, when I was gone and the monkeys took over the zoo, a certain something about Greg got brushed under the carpet, and it turns out we got notice. I'm not sure how, but we got wind that it was actually his birthday last week.
Oh,
and I believe there's actually a special greeting from one of the listeners of the show.
Yeah, actually, we have a couple actually. As you know, Greg is a big fan of the NFL, and so we decided to get some birthday greetings from several NFL luminaries, if you will. And the first one, let me just read these. The first one, it's all of these are very touching. They brought a tear to my eye, but I know it's a little late, but it took some time to review the tape so I could decide just what to say. Let's try for perfection this year too. All the signals point to a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Greg. Bill Belichick.
Oh,
that's number one. So there you are.
Yeah, that absolves him of everything.
Uh-huh. I have a couple.
He also wrote, "P.S. Better luck to Buffalo this year."
Oh yeah.
Well, actually, you know, I decided to make a trip over to the Bills clubhouse, and I talked to somebody who definitely had a special birthday greeting for Greg. It goes, "Greg, birthdays are like hit and run cases. You can only avoid dealing with them for so long. Happy birthday, Marshawn Lynch."
Somebody had to get. Somebody had to get stitches on their hip in that. That's not funny. That's just deplorable.
I thought that was really thoughtful and clever, too. I thought that was pretty clever.
Possibly incriminating. I think that's always what I look for in a birthday wish.
It's always a good way to you know, get yourself convicted through a birthday message.
The last one here is... I decided to, you know, to kind of stay with the Bills theme, but kind of, you know... Get you know, a birthday greeting from a Hall of Famer. So this one goes
from the Bills.
This one goes, "Dear Greg."
Wait, the Bills have Hall of Famers?
Oh yeah. And there's one that's also in the Hall of Infamy. If you follow me,
well,
and this is probably where this is going.
Well, it goes like this. It's like, "Happy Greg, happy birthday." I didn't do it. OJ Simpson.
Yeah.
There you go.
I knew where it was going.
I thought OJ played for the Raiders.
No,
for some
he played
reason.
For the Bills no. for almost all of his career. He played, I think, for the 49ers for a brief period when he's kind of past it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. He played for USC in college, so he was going back to California, I guess, a bit north.
Mm-hmm. So OJ claiming innocence for Greg's birthday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
innocence.
I can assure you, OJ, Greg would have gotten older with or without you.
Yeah. Innocent. So. I think it'll comfort you to think I think Bill Belichick is the worst person out of those three. That's my priorities.
Oh God. All right. Well, so while we are reading well wishes to people who we care very deeply about, I just want to say to Sarah in Iowa. I really am concerned about you, and I wish you the best, and later today I will be mailing a fruit basket to you and your family.
Amen.
Yeah, I look forward to getting that, Johnny.
What?
Yes.
What are you saying, James?
That plan would have been brilliant if I could have just...
Kept your mouth
under
shut.
Control for a little while. Yeah, it was just too.
Yeah,
so just
you're
out
one
there.
Notch below a James Bond villain. You know, they almost get to follow through before they spill the beans and end up foiling it. Whereas you kind of you couldn't really handle it halfway through.
Well, John actually knew it all ahead of time, so I figured if it got too creepy, he'd just stop talking to me.
Yeah, well, I figured there's no way that anybody that I didn't know would ever mention the phrase "silky smooth" in any email that was ever sent to me. So it was pretty obvious when I got that first email. I was like, I don't know who this is, but it's somebody I know, and they're trying to fuck with
yeah.
me.
Yeah. When I read Silky Smooth, I kind of wondered if it was somebody who already knew you, because
yeah.
that's Well, we have just... used it in the show once. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, I thought it was one of my friends.
Isn't your nickname Silk, Silks? Like originally from Silk the Shocker, the also ran rapper from the 90s?
No,
who's a protege of Master P?
I wish it was.
No?
No, actually.
You can lie. I mean, none of us are going to
know
actually,
better. The way that
I would.
Because you're a huge Silk the Shocker fan. I know, Johnny.
Well, no, it's just that I know what's going on in the streets.
We're breaking blocks.
Yes.
That's in the
exactly.
club as well.
Also, bitches ain't shit.
On the beach. Yeah, actually, the way that started is just one of my buddies said, I just made a snappy comeback to him, and he said, oh, you're really smooth with the comebacks, silky smooth. And then everybody started to say it, and then after that, it just took off from there. So that's that. I wish it was a cooler story.
So it's a totally nice. Undeserved nickname. Well, everybody needs one.
I still got to come up with one for you, John.
Also, referring to, yeah, you gave me a pretty good one. I like that. Referring to what happened on last episode, I listened to it, and I have a pretty good sense of humor about myself, I think, and I caught a lot of shit from you guys. I was made fun of quite a bit, and I laughed at it because it was funny, most of it. But there were a lot of factual inaccuracies, so I just want to present, before we get too deep in the show, the editorial corrections. Okay, first off, I'm not a hippie, but I do enjoy hippie music.
That's halfway there, man.
Uh-huh. Next up, I couldn't play Magic Online at the festival, but I did play Trauma Center Under the Knife 2 a few times while resting.
For review purposes or just to taunt us?
For review purposes. I did play Magic Online the day I got home, but I'll talk about that in new business.
Because it's breaking news.
Well, if you had listened carefully, we said that you didn't play it there, but that you were wishing you could. So you might have just actually confirmed that.
I was wishing that I could for a specific reason. I had not played it for a few weeks before that, but I'll get to that later. That guy in New York was not Kevin Bacon, but my friend thought he was. I think you guys had our roles reversed, where you seemed to think I was the one who thought he was Kevin Bacon. No. We were in this art museum.
That was all Carl. Yeah.
We were in this art museum following this guy around because my friend thought he was Kevin Bacon and wanted his autograph, but he was afraid to ask him in case it wasn't him. And I was like, which guy are you talking about? And he points at him, and I kind of look around the corner. I was like, dude, that's not Kevin Bacon. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And we ended up following this guy for 2 or 3 minutes, trying to get like a good, clear look at his face, and we never could. But I guarantee you that was not Kevin Bacon. It just wasn't.
Radio free Kevin Bacon.
Yes. Since this was a hot topic, I wanted to give you guys a list of the free game systems I have received for working at this website. A PlayStation 2. That was a gift from Billy. That was a gift from Billy for
but
all my hard work.
That was a personal gift, though, right? Wasn't it? Or did it actually?
It was a personal gift,
so
yes.
That didn't actually come from the site itself, because he probably got that for something else, right?
At the time, Billy and the site were pretty much the same thing. So it wasn't for work purposes. It was a thank you present for all my hard work. But this was several years ago. So PlayStation 2, a GameCube debug, GBA SP times 2. Yes, I got an import one when it first came out in Japan, and I reviewed it. I'm pretty sure I reviewed it. I definitely reviewed a bunch of games on it. And then when Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles came out and I had to review that, I requested that Nintendo send us an extra one so I could do multiplayer.
Wait, and that worked?
Yeah. They published it.
Nintendo, I need an extra Wii Remote so I can fully experience whatever the hell next game I'm reviewing.
Okay, an original Nintendo DS, which there were pictures of me on the website of me, like, licking the touchscreen. You guys
might that's
remember
inappropriate.
That. Yeah. A Nintendo Wii.
What? You got it for free?
Yes.
Yeah, this was on the podcast.
I also reviewed Twilight Princess by the day it was released. So I wouldn't say for free. I was up playing that game until 3 in the morning during finals exam week.
Ooh.
But yes, I didn't have to pay for it with money.
With blood and treasure.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad that I'm almost upset that I forgot to mention the there's a million of them while Stan was on here. But
and finally, Nintendo DS Lite times 3.
times three?
Yes.
So that was
technically
actually,
I'm on my fourth DS total right now.
Just for kicks.
Okay, so the first
it disappeared
one...
disappeared into the void.
Excuse me. The first one
light
was,
fire with them.
Was the first one... Hey, listen now. The first one was an import system that was blue. I didn't like the American colors, so I got a blue one through, I think, Lixang at the time. When we got an American black system from Nintendo, I had them send that to me, and then I sent my blue one to someone else. I don't remember who it was. By the way, my original Fat DS, I sent to Carly when I got my first DS Lite. So both of those were passed on. And then the black one I lost just a couple months ago, as I've reported on the show. And so we had the American blue one. Well, it was blue and black. It's the Brain Age 2 color or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's the top half is blue, the bottom half is black. So we had that one from Nintendo that had been sitting at Pell's office for like 2 months. And I asked if that thing had ever been sent out to anyone. They said, No, we've still got it. And I said, well, what are you keeping it for? They said, we were kind of hoping we could do a Mario Kart Wii tournament. And I said, look, I've told you guys this before, but that is totally impossible. It's just not practical. With the friend code set up and everything, and lag and cheating and various factors, it's really not reasonable to do a tournament. And I wasn't saying this out of self-serving. I told them this before, and they had kind of, at the time, ignored my advice, and then waited 2 months trying to figure out a way to do it properly. And I was like, "Yeah, you're not gonna, because you can't do it."
Well, yeah, it was the kind
and
of
so
deal
said,
where like
they said, "Well, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
we'll
I mean,
send it to
Johnny
you."
Would bring it up, and I'd be like, "Yeah, okay, that sounds cool," and then nobody else would reply to it, and so nothing ever happened.
Yeah,
you know,
running a tournament like that is a nightmare, and it's not feasible with the current online system that they have. So. Anyway, my follow-up comment to that list of systems is, if any of you feel like I've wasted any of these systems, please let me know. And I will refer you to a list of articles on the website.
Well, I've still got my original launch
point
GBA
and
my launch
Jonathan.
DS, so...
Might I refer you to my 100 reviews on the website? Thank you very much. Good day, sir.
In the post.
Exactly.
So how many games
I'm glad you laughed, John,
because
there was an
review?
Awkward silence there. And I was like, that was... meant to be funny.
Yes. For the public good, Jonathan Metz clears up misconceptions.
Yeah. I just thoroughly
indeed.
Enjoy it.
No, I've made pretty... I feel like I'm pretty comfortable with what I've done with those systems. So, but I have gotten a lot of free shit from this site. I'm not gonna deny
I mean,
that.
I think part of that is the fact that you've been like kind of a focal point of the site for a while. You know, I mean, when you're your editor of the site, it's very easy to, you know, cherry-pick stuff because, you know...
Of course, yeah.
People come to you, man. They know you.
I'm not going to deny
You're
that either.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, rolling on with the corrections. I'm halfway through now.
There's more?
I did tell Carl that he could have a Wii debug system when he became previews editor. Unfortunately, we still don't have one to this day. So it's not my fault that he didn't ever get one. That wasn't a lie. It was a promise that I was unable to fulfill. But not by choice.
Well, we don't really get sent that many debug builds of games, though, anyway, do we?
No, because we don't have a system to play them on.
Oh, okay.
Yes. All right.
Well, that would make it harder, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Next one. I don't love High School Musical. I did see about 30 minutes of the first one on TV once, and it's better than most Disney Channel crap. That's about all I can say for it.
Uh-huh. Well, that's comforting.
It's good enough for us. It's good enough for us to just run with it.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I don't love High School Musical, but next point, I do like Naked Girls. Next point, the character in P&O 3 is Vanessa Z. Schneider. I should know since I had to review that game. Favorite phrase.
I messed up her. Oh, I messed up the middle initial of a character from a game I've
and
never
that was
played.
A thing.
That's right.
Oh. James, we think we can all agree that was by far the most egregious error made on the podcast last week.
No, I'm not really correcting you, James. I just wanted to put this in here so I could talk about P&O 3 for a sec, because you guys... we're kind of making fun of it, but it sounded like none of you had played it, and I
unfortunately have
played the game quite extensively.
I've played a demo of it for a little bit, but besides that,
My favorite phrase from that review is stripper ballerina with a, nice. With a hyphen in the middle. That's nice. A compound term, yeah.
Keeping it classy.
Yeah. No, that game is interesting. It's a historical footnote. That's the best I can say about
the
it.
William, as in the one that actually stayed exclusive in that regard.
Because nobody else wanted it.
It's not a terrible game, but it's not great, that's for sure.
It's not a good game.
It's pretty mediocre, and it's very niche. I mean, it's just not a game I would recommend to just anybody, but like, if you're really into, like, I don't know, stuff
women
like if
dancing.
Like Jet Force Gemini, like, or, you know, like, if you're really into, or Winback, if you're really into the idea of, like, pressing up against a piece of cover and jumping out and shooting off three or four shots and then jumping back behind the cover because you can get killed in three hits, that's kind of what PNO3 is like.
It just looks like it has no depth whatsoever. I mean, it just looks like it's the same thing over and over.
It is very repetitive. Yeah. I mean, there's some fun to be had. It's not a totally useless game, but it's not that great. So finally, I have never been in a drum circle, but I have been in a harmonica circle, and it was lame.
Oh my god.
Yes.
Why would you even admit that?
They call the official term that people use for these are circle jams. I call them circle jerks. I really don't go for that. Like when the circle jam starts, that's when I leave. I just don't. I don't care to sit in a group of 20 harmonica players and take my turn. I just don't. So
Johnny Harmonica Circle Mets.
Yeah. No, I just said I don't like them.
So please stop.
Yes.
Please stop your mockery.
I'm glad to say that you participated.
Yes. Okay. Those are my corrections.
So please just continue.
I think it's dangerous to indulge sort of obsessive compulsive urges to correct the last week's podcast. It could be a life's work.
Those are only the ones that related to me. There were many more errors made that I'm not going to get into.
I mean, really, if you were really going to correct last week's podcast, it probably involved time travel.
Yeah, seriously, and... I agree.
You just have to go and remove
and
it
yanking
from the site
of cords
altogether.
Out of people's computers, probably.
Yes.
Last week was like nothing it's ever happened.
Yeah, I mean, the only
on
way
the
we
show.
Could go back and fix it is if we had some sort of, you know, podcast quantum leap where I could play like Scott, you know, Bakula and go back and just, you know, just
remember abstinence is the best form of prevention.
Well, you know, somebody joked that it was just going to be an unusual amount of Jason Rishi, and I actually considered it at one point. I was just like, well, how much do I have?
Yeah, actually, James, I was going to mention to you before I even heard that, the clips that I gave you are actually longer than what you usually play, and
oh,
it would be
no,
nicer.
They're not, Johnny.
They're not?
I play the whole thing.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Huh. Okay, well, I might cut you up some longer takes that you can use occasionally, not every show. But
just whenever we have a code red situation like last week.
No, I think I was listening to One Up Yours, and even though they use like the generic GarageBand built-in music, they let it play out for a good like 30 seconds, whereas sometimes it seems like the breaks between segments on our show are like literally 5 seconds long. Maybe that's just because I can't wait until it starts back up, but I think
song
they're actually pretty
to,
short.
The song I refer to as Break 2 is 8.5 seconds long.
I don't think I ever sent anything that short.
I will send them back to you to prove it, man.
Yeah, maybe I sent them to Carl, and he cut them up shorter, and then he sent them to you when you became the editor.
Maybe.
Really technical
inside baseball,
behind-the-scenes stuff that I really doubt anybody cares about. So why don't we start the show with new business, and who wants to go first?
Oh, why don't you go first, since you've got all sorts of new business to talk about?
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Yeah, but I've been talking too much the past couple minutes. They need a break from me.
I think they need a break from us, too, for at least a month.
Forever.
You guys weren't the main problem with last week's show, though. The other guys talked way more than you.
We were complicit.
Poor Greg
in its
was
destruction.
Like an uncharacteristically
I think
quiet.
He was kind of shell-shocked, to be honest.
He just seemed overwhelmed.
It was very challenging to get a word in, and most of it was about non-Nintendo stuff, which scares me a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Greg's like a little child when people.
You know,
start
we have an episode called
and...
"We Talk About Nintendo" here, and in that episode, I think we talked about Nintendo about 50 times as much as we did last week.
Yeah. And that was an ironic episode title, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an ironic episode title. That was the intention. Yeah. All right, but I'll start first.
Okay.
All right, so I haven't actually played a whole lot since, you know, I started work and stuff, and I'm still really getting into the feel of it. But I have been playing around with the Spore Creature Creator demo, because I'm not going to pay for a demo of a demo. But
I thought the whole thing was free.
No, there's a demo version that's free, but that's, like, severely limited as to what items you get to create your creature.
Now, wait, I thought the whole idea of the creature creator was that it was, like a promo for Spore.
Nope.
So it was like this one chunk of Spore that you could play for free, the idea being that it would make you want to buy the full game when it came out this fall.
Nope, the full creature creator is $10.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and you get a...
That's ridiculous.
You get a discount on Spore, but you don't get all ten of your bucks
It's not
back.
Even a game. It's like Photoshop for retarded-looking monsters, right?
You can create your monster, and you can have them walk around a circle, and you can have them pose and stuff, but you can't actually have them do anything besides
that. Oh, good grief.
It's Will Wright. It's amazing.
It is, but it's not even that. It's actually less than Tamagotchi because they don't really interact with you.
It's less of a game than Tamagotchi. Yeah, it's a quote on the back of the box.
But the amazing thing is that you can actually like take pictures and stuff, or press like this record video, and it actually integrated your YouTube login with the game, so it'll immediately upload your video directly to YouTube.
That's cool.
Which is kind of a neat built-in feature.
Yeah.
But besides that, there's not a lot of depth in there if you're not trying to create giant floating penises.
I think I'll wait for Spore and just get it then, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can get the demo for free, but like I said, you only get about a third of the items. But, you know, it gives you a good feel for what's there, and that's what I've been doing with it. I've built all sorts of non-penile monsters because...
But also plenty of penile monsters.
I'm personally opposed.
But also plenty of penile
monsters,
John? As well, I'm sure. I'm just.
Oh yeah, there are.
Just clarify.
But
keeping a good mix.
But the weird thing is that, so you know, you go and you build whatever you want, and then you upload it to their Sporepedia site, whatever they called it, and it actually puts images of your monster, and the actual link to download the monster itself on there, and you can put your commentary and things. There are some really awesome ones up there.
I heard there's a really badass fruit fucker.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Penny Arcade.
It's mortifying. There's actually somebody who's created it's a chopper, like a motorcycle, with a guy riding on it. And like it looks like just like that. It is freaky looking. And quite scary to look at, to be honest. But
yeah, because the idea is that like it's not like a model poser. I mean, you're creating these like organic creatures out of arms and legs and things. So, like, how the hell would you make a motorcycle with a guy on it?
I don't know.
And that sounds like it should not be possible in this game.
Well, you know, what you get, it's not just you get arms and legs and things. When you launch the creature creator, which I assume this will be the same in the retail product, you get, like, this amorphous blob that has vertebra, and you can stretch the vertebra out to a certain length. I don't remember exactly how many vertebra you can have. And then you can sort of move the vertebra around to sort of angle the body. And then you can, using the mouse wheel, individually increase or decrease the size of the body around that vertebra. And then on that, after you've posed it in the way you want and built the body up the way you want, you start attaching things like limbs, feet, hands, wings, head. You don't actually attach heads. Heads are actually something you build from that vertebra system. But you attach, like, the facial elements, the mouth, the eyes, the ears. But I guess, I mean, I never downloaded that one because I don't have all the components that were used in it. But I guess they managed to manipulate the vertebra bit enough until they had exactly what they were able to build on. I mean, it looks pretty cool. And I'm pretty sure they didn't, you know, modify the code or anything.
Yeah.
There's also like a locomotive, which was awesome.
That's really cool.
Because I'm just hoping that one day...
Does it have
like,
spinning wheels?
It might. I think they made the wheels out of back plates, like back armor, like shells. And I'm hoping that one day I'll have to invade a planet with trains on it, because that would be awesome. Yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, I know I'm excited about Spore because of what people have been able to do, but what I've created, I just couldn't do anything like that. I mean, I'm just still stunned what people were able to do with it. So I almost feel like I'm not getting everything out of it that some people are going to get.
But so, let me get this straight. So the idea is that, say someone makes one of these crazy animals. The idea of the game is going to be that you drop this thing onto your planet, and it just kind of...
does.
It just kind of... yeah.
It just does,
it just kind of evolves into something.
Right. And as
wait, though. I think in the actual Spore game, you guide that development.
No, you don't.
You take that... you take the creature that you created, and there's a kind of Age of Empires light kind of game, where it's like kind of a real-time strategy. Like, you're taking over other civilizations, and you're gaining land, and you're building up your society. It's like Civilization.
As I understand it, the evolution of your creature and its characteristics are driven by what you built on it. So the elements of the body that you included will determine what that creature does, and there are stats based on what you've put on it. You know, like its vision ability, its ability to attack certain ways. And that as it evolves, you can add more components and increase its complexity, because there's a limit on how complex you can make it. Mm-hmm. And that's how you guide it. But the creatures, from as I understand it, are pretty much independent of what you want them to do. They just sort of go.
I don't know if it's that AI-driven. I think there is some kind of strategy-like control over where the creatures go and what they do, but... I don't know. I mean, Spore, I haven't played Spore, and listening to the people who have played Spore, they seem kind of confused about it too, because the way the game has been demoed to the press has been very broken up, and so it's kind of hard to... these interfaces between the different stages of the game sound like they're not very well defined.
Well, but, based on the fact they released the Creature Creator demo, what, like, how many months before the actual product comes out? It's still several months.
I think the game's supposed to come out in August or September, so it's pretty close.
But still,
I want to say the Wii version's coming out later than the other.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it's maybe Christmas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wii version could actually be the biggest seller if they market it right.
Yeah. Oh yeah, easily. Mm-hmm. But what is weird about it is the fact they released the Creature Creator independent of itself leads me to believe that not only is it displayed broken up, that its development might actually have been, you know, done in pieces by different teams.
Well, I think it could also be a problem of, like, how do you create a traditional PC demo of this game without giving away the entire game? Because the scope of the game is such that it's probably not practical to give a vertical slice or something like that.
Right.
It's just not possible to do a vertical slice on this game.
Yeah, because the game is...
And so maybe they think, rather than try to give you, like, a pre-created species and let you see the progress from microbial level up through UFOs and interstellar travel, maybe it's just better to give you, like, this one particularly interesting chunk of the game and hide from you the stuff below it and above it, you know?
Well, see, what I think is going to happen, or at least is happening now, is that they couldn't really do a traditional demo because it's so driven by what happens on the online galaxy. But when your monster is released into the galaxy, how it sort of migrates itself onto other worlds.
Right.
And how other worlds migrate onto you. And so if they just released a pre-built character, suddenly the world would be populated by a million of this character. And then when the actual game comes out, it would all go to hell.
Yeah.
So it could be interesting to see what happens when the actual retail game comes out. Like, if the game gets flooded with these monsters built in the character creator, and suddenly, you know, it's just ridiculously overpopulated. Because that could be a risk in this game.
I have no idea what's going to happen with Spore. I don't really know what to expect, but I do think it'll be cool. And I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, I definitely want to hear more about the final version and get some impressions of, like, just what it's like to play Spore, because I don't have a good feeling for that yet. But if it's more or less what Will Wright promised a couple years ago when they first announced it, it's definitely something I'm going to get, either on PC or Wii. I'll get it. I'm happy to wait for the Wii version if the online components are well done. if they're essentially on par with the other versions. And if they're not, then I'll just get it for PC.
See, I think the PC
it sounds
version...
like it sounds like PC. Yeah, I agree with James. I mean, James, you're probably going to say the PC version seems like the way to go, right?
Yeah, because I mean, it seems like the online component is so built around, you know, having a broadband connection coming into the PC and downloading the monsters that have decided to pay you a visit.
But all that stuff is possible on the Wii. It's just a matter of whether EA gets it right. Mm. And if they do,
nobody's
I would
done
probably
like
rather
that.
Play it with a Wii remote and show it to people on my TV rather than drag them back here by the computer. You know, so I can definitely see the appeal of having it on the Wii. I'm just not going to settle for a shitty version of it. And it sounds like if they're waiting 2 or 3 months to work on the Wii version after the other ones come out, it sounds like they probably are going to do a good job with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, just like a Rock Band?
Well, that's a different developer, but a different publisher, too. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, EA doesn't have that much to do with Rock Band. They're just the distributor.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, it's you know there is a precedent for holding Wii games back but not really doing much.
But I think that wasn't really holding it back. It was almost like bringing it forward because it's like no, we're not going to do it. And then Guitar Hero sells what it sells on the Wii, and then it's like oh crap, let's get one out. Whereas you know, Spore has been envisioned as coming out on the Wii from the beginning, or well, not probably from the beginning, but because it was 2 years ago, it goes back so far. But certainly, well in advance of when it's actually going to come out.
Right. I think this time last year, Harmonix and MTV Games did not expect they would ever release a version of Rock Band.
Precisely, yeah. That was forcibly changed by market forces, whereas this is more, one would think, a developmentally driven decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it was really bad foresight on their part, because again, this time last year, I could have told you Guitar Hero 3 would have been a huge deal on the Wii. Mm-hmm. I knew it would be. Mm-hmm. I just the demographics match up that way.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the perfect...
I just think it's very poor planning.
Well, I think it's more curious to me in the sense that the PS2 version was there. Yeah, because the thing with Wii, obviously, just relative to the HD consoles, is why it's so different, and the online infrastructure is kind of this. I mean, not that graphics should matter so much with a game like Rock Band, but the online infrastructure maybe. But when you're doing a PS2 version, you're happy to do that without any of that stuff in. How difficult was it at that stage to say, well, you know, what are the sort of spin-offs of that is we can port it to Wii relatively quickly and just cash in on what we can, and I don't understand why that took so long.
All I've heard so far about Rock Band for Wii are basically, it sounds like Harmonix are basically saying that we can't really make it much better than the PS2 version because we didn't have time.
Yes.
Like, you know, we've all these excuses like, well, we didn't really start it until after Christmas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time to make any Wii-specific features. We don't have time to get the online working because it's just not feasible right now. And my answer to all that is bullshit. I don't want to hear your fucking excuses. Mm. This is the same thing I said to Okami. You know, Okami is a beautiful game. It came out 2 years earlier on the PS2. The Wii version comes out. It's not enhanced whatsoever except widescreen. It's actually worse in some respects. The graphic, you know, they couldn't replicate all the graphical features from the PS2 game. The controls have certain issues, although it sounds like they're better than initially thought. But basically, you've got Ready at Dawn Games saying, well, it's not our fault. There were all these problems. We had to scavenge the data off the disk to get it to work at all. We only had 9 months to make it, to which I say, I am sympathetic to your cause, Mr. Independent Developer, but I don't want to hear your bullshit excuses. I don't fucking care. I'm the consumer. I'm paying $50 for the game or $40 for the game. When it comes to my house and I've paid money for it, I don't care what issues you had in the development process. Get it right or I'm not buying it.
To me, I just... And if that
means delaying it 3 months, then work that out. And maybe it's ultimately Capcom's fault and not the developer's fault. I don't, as the consumer, I don't see the difference between them. You know, as a media person, I understand these things and I find them fascinating, these development stories and everything. Mm-hmm. But from a consumer point of view, if you want to know why Okami didn't sell, it's the same shit. The average consumer doesn't know the difference between the developer and the publisher. They don't know these behind-the-scenes stories of everything that the developer had to go through to port it to the system. And the same goes with Rock Band. Nobody cares.
Well, I think one of the differences between the two situations is with Rock Band, the time frame is everything. The whole point is to get it out as quickly as possible to capitalize on that success that that genre is having on Wii. With Okami, I don't really see the same imperative. So they could have taken as long as they wanted, hypothetically.
They could have started working on a Wii version back in 2006 when we told them that they should.
Well, that's the thing. I think
Okami was shown almost complete at E3 2006, and dozens upon dozens of people went over to Capcom, played the PS2 version, and said, "Wow, this is really good. Have you started the Wii version yet?" And Capcom was like, "No, we have no plans for that." Fucking ridiculous. I mean, what's wrong with
I mean, I don't know how much the tumult with Clover kind of factored into it, but foresight seemed to be a bit lacking. But like I said, with Rock Band, that's the whole point of it, is for it to get out quickly. I mean, that's its sole purpose to exist. So they're never going to take the extra time and care to make it good or, you know, up to the standard, let's say, especially
passable.
When it is coming out this many months later, because the whole point of it is just get it out, sell as many copies as possible, and then they'll come back next time, presumably, whenever that will be for Rock Band. And
it's exactly like that. It's like that first Madden game for Wii. It's like the entire point of that game was just get it out there. We don't give a shit what's in it. Just get it out there.
But that's the way the first Madden game is for every system.
Yeah,
true. But I have to say, in its defense, I saw the first Madden game for Wii at E3 3-4 months before it came out, and I thought it had some pretty interesting features. It was obviously not developed for Wii from the ground up, but they were putting some pretty cool motion gestures in there. Now, I didn't play the final version.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right.
I don't know how well it actually executed, but they put some effort into it to make it for the Wii.
Yeah, they drank the Kool-Aid a little bit on that one.
Yeah.
Well, I think the problem with Madden is that they didn't do a better job of it the next
year.
Yeah,
that's interesting, because apparently the second iteration was almost identical to the first one, which I found surprising.
Yeah, they added online.
They were very natural.
As far as controls and really thinking about it, I mean, if you don't see nearly the innovation that you see in, for instance, Pro Evolution Soccer.
Well, because the interesting thing is, so the first version, it's very natural that they would be getting it out very quickly to get in the launch window. But the second one, they did do a whole lot, whereas with this one, the third one now for the Wii, there is going to be, because they are going to integrate a bit of pointer functionality with a call your shot mode, where you can actually sort of do pre-snap quick audibles by altering the routes of the receivers prior to the play. So they're getting to it now. I think I could kind of forgive them the first time. The second time, I think they kind of dropped the ball, and it didn't sell very well, as my understanding goes, on the Wii.
No,
well,
but that's sort of
the
standard for sport. Well, that's sort of the standard for sports games on Nintendo consoles, though.
Well, yeah. Well, but I mean, Pro Evo sort of caught fire a bit on the Wii, in the territories that care.
In the territories that care.
Well, the thing is with Pro Evo is the fact that, number one, it's an experience that I don't really think is done better anywhere else than the Wii. I mean, it kind of stands alone in terms of even versus the PS3 and 360 versions. I mean, it plays entirely differently, and it plays well. It's not shoehorned. I mean, they literally took the whole thing.
And of course,
I
think it's worth mentioning as a contrasting here that Konami did wait to, like, in terms of a previous Pro Evo game came out for the HD consoles, I think, certainly the 360 anyway, and PS2, while the Wii was on shelves, but there was no Wii version. They held it and they waited. You know, they didn't release just a sort of PS2 version with gesture controls. They waited until they developed something that was very Wii specific, and then that was the Wii version. So they should be commended for that as the sort of the converse case to what we're talking about with Rock Band and Madden.
I think Madden could be... I think the Wii version of Madden could be the best-selling version of Madden for the same reasons, and in the same way the Guitar Hero 3 Wii version is the best-selling version of that game. If it's marketed properly, if the version they make is actually good and tailored to the strengths of the system, the demographics are there.
The thing is that,
I mean, Madden is ostensibly a casual game. It's not casual in the way that Wii Sports is.
It's mainstream.
It's
there we
very
go.
Mainstream.
I'll take that
and
better.
Wii is very mainstream. Now, I realize they're not mainstream in exactly the same way, but I think there is a ton of overlap
there.
I think you could actually sell more Wiis with a good Wii version of Madden, and I certainly think you could sell a lot more copies of Madden on Wii than they have so far if you just do it
I think,
well,
yeah, it's
and they just haven't.
Potential.
So maybe this year is the year.
I mean, what holds the Wii back there is its really, really weak online offering. I mean, if it had something even almost as good as Xbox 360, I mean, the Wii version would absolutely, I mean, it would be amazing. You know, and
do
it would
you
sell
think
huge.
That many people play Madden online, or they just
well,
buy
as a
version because they think they might want to play it online?
Because the issue is, because I mean, so many people buy Madden, don't they? I mean, how many of those people, as a percentage? I mean, there's clearly a lot of people that take online Madden very seriously, but as a percentage of the people that buy it overall,
oh, I bet it's 10%.
It's probably not that
less.
Big. I think it'd be interesting to see how
disagree.
EA handle this.
No, I think it's probably higher.
It's way higher than 10%, man.
10%
no way is it 10%.
But
regardless, I don't think it's really the online situation because, again, Madden 2008, released last year, has supposedly a pretty decent online mode.
Yeah, because they completely avoided Nintendo's online system.
Yeah,
they didn't use Wii. I mean, the lag, I don't know about the lag, but the functionality apparently is pretty decent. So
yeah.
I don't think it's just online.
Well, I think what would be really interesting. What would be very interesting with how EA approached this time is, of course, last time presumably Microsoft sort of proactively seeking it out. It was Madden was heavily marketed with the 360 branding itself. It'd be interesting this time if they take a two-pronged approach. In terms of they're branding all their the EA Sports Wii games there with this all play sort of suffix.
Yes,
and
that's all we get about the NCAA game.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see whether now is you know there'll be the presumably once again the heavily 360 marketed HD version, and that will almost be marketed a bit differently, more to the person that cares about online all those sorts of things. And then with the all play, they'll be trying to get people that maybe you know have bought a Wii but they haven't bought many sports games yet. You know, they've got Guitar Hero, they've got like just Wii Sports, things like that. Yeah,
they should just rename it to Wii Football Training. All-
Football Hero.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think I'm gonna have to axe this discussion. We did start with Spore and we ended up at Madden.
Oh well, wait, I can connect the two. I can connect the two. Not only are they both EA games, but there have been made football players. There we go.
Oh, scary! I don't even want to see that.
Yeah, it's pretty.
All right,
it's pretty horrific.
So let's get back into new business. I assume you're finished, James.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I'll go next. I've got a few things. First off, as I alluded to earlier, I was thinking about Magic Online a little bit while at Bonnaroo. And
then
the reason
that wasn't
for that,
a correction.
It kind of was. I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up. The reason I was thinking about it is that the new set of cards came out online while I was gone, and so I had not played for probably a month before that, but I knew this was coming up. I was kind of waiting to do anything else on it until the new set came out, and so it did come out. So when I got home, I logged in and installed the patch and all that crap and ordered some new cards with what was left of the money I got from selling my paper cards, which wasn't very much. So that's all gone now. So according to the ground rules I set when I first installed the game, I cannot buy any more cards because I don't have any money left from the paper cards.
Until you sell your plasma.
Yeah, I may. But anyway, I really like the new set. I knew I would. I had read about it, and that's why I was looking forward to it. But yeah, I really do like the new set, and so I've played that for a couple hours this week. I also played mostly computer games here. I also played Half-Life 2 Episode 1 a little bit more, and that was fun. I got to the part where Alex is wielding a sniper rifle for me as I kind of go ahead. So that's pretty cool stuff. I played quite a bit of Team Fortress 2. Last week they released the update with the pyro achievements and the new pyro weapons, and also a couple of new user-created maps were officially added to the lineup. And so I was playing, Wendy and I played, I think Thursday or Friday, we played for like 3 hours on the NeoGAF server, and it was funny, when we first went in, we were the only two people there, and we were basically just running around waiting for more people to join, and it seemed like they never would. Like, one or two people came in. We waited like half an hour, 45 minutes, and I was just about ready to give up, and all of a sudden this flood of people came in, and I think we almost filled the server within an hour. And so we played for a couple hours that way, and it was brilliant. It was so much fun. That game, when you have good people playing and they actually know what they're doing and they cooperate and they talk to each other, there's just almost nothing better. I mean, it's a pretty amazing experience, and it's too bad that it can't be like that all the time. There's just no way for that to happen, but when it's good, it's amazing.
See, I kind of enjoy servers where it just goes to pure chaos every so often.
Really?
Because
if the game is being played well, it basically is pure chaos.
But if the game is being played exceptionally poorly, it's amazing chaos.
Yeah.
You see, this is the problem when you apply Team Fortress logic to podcasting, James, that certain things happen.
Certain things don't mix, James.
So are you suggesting that the entire podcast last week was one long extension of Team Speak griefing?
could have been. I don't know.
I think so.
So, James, did you play TF2 last week, too?
I have not gotten the Pyro patch yet. Okay, I got the Medic patch a while back.
Yeah, they put that up a couple months ago.
But that
was not as good.
No,
the problem there
is
that
with it.
Medic is a pretty difficult class to play well. It's actually the only one that I'm good at. It's the one I've played the most, and I really enjoy it. But I found the Medic update to be kind of obnoxious, just in the way that people started playing Medic. Right. Well, the problem is the achievements that they put in, and basically for people who aren't familiar with this, they added three new weapons, and they're all pretty good. And the only way you can unlock the weapons is to get these achievements. They're like Xbox Live achievements, except they're really hard to get.
Yes.
I mean, the Medic achievements are insane. They're psychotically difficult to get. And so it became obvious pretty quickly that you're not going to unlock these weapons through normal playing. You're just not, unless you're like a god at Medic. It's not going to happen. And
nope.
So it pretty much required achievement whoring. And so you had to conspire with other people, and you're no longer really playing the game. You're just setting up these situations where you can get achievements, and it's stupid.
That's
when you mix
like
those people on the same server with people who actually want to play the game, the meta game breaks down, and it's not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. So it sucks. The Pyro achievements are much easier. You get the weapons unlocks faster. It just in a matter of a couple days playing, you're probably going to get your first one, and so it's not been nearly as bad of a problem.
Well, you know, I've heard that there are levels that were built just to get the Pyro achievement. They're like,
oh sure. Well, they did that for the Medic too. They're custom levels.
Yeah, but it's a little bit harder for the Medic to do that. The Pyro, they literally just built a box with the spawn points like 5 feet away from each other and one capture point in the middle, and then everybody played a Pyro and just destroyed the level. I mean, it was
Well, the thing is with Pyro, pretty much all the achievements come from killing people.
Right.
And so all you really need is another person, and you agree, okay, you stand there for a while, you know, then I'll take my turn. It's not that complicated. With Medic, because it's a support class, it's much more complicated.
Yeah.
You have to be cooperating with a heavy who can kill all these people while he's on an Uber charge, and you have to set up the Uber charge, and you have to have a certain number of things for the heavy to kill before the Uber charge wears off. It's extremely complicated. So I think it's not as easy to whore out the Medic achievements, except they're so hard to do that you kind of have to. Like, that's not going to happen during a normal game. You're not going to Ubercharge a heavy and he killed 10 people in 30 seconds. That's just so unlikely. And
no,
so
I think I only saw it happen once during the fury of people trying to get it.
Yeah.
And I probably played about 10 hours that week. And like I said, I only saw it happen in one match ever. And people were like, oh my god, somebody got it.
Well, I think I've played the Medic is by far my most class played, and it was that before the Medic achievement came out. I mean, supposedly they went with the Medic first because not enough people were playing it. I thought that was strange because I always went to Medic first. I just thought it was the most interesting class, and I enjoyed playing it. But that is by far the class that I'm the most skilled at, and I've still to this day only got like maybe 7 achievements of the Medic pack, and you have to have 11 before you get the first weapon unlock.
I mean, I think for the original achievements that the game came with, I didn't even have that many. It was just like a very small number, because some of them even the original achievements were really hard to get.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that until you attach the achievements to unlocking
weapons. And see, that's what bothers me, because, you know, you've already paid for the game. So why should they, you know...
Oh, no, that's a stupid argument.
No,
that's
it's not.
That's like saying you should have a level select in every game that lets you skip to the end boss.
You should.
It's still a fundamental
you
element.
Should.
It's part of game design.
I don't believe that.
It's game design.
No, because in this particular game, the addition of these weapons throws off the balance of the game between players who do have and players who don't have.
Yeah, I do have a problem with unlockable weapons in multiplayer games because it throws off the balance, like you said.
And I think it would discourage people who are just getting into the game because they're being destroyed, especially in the Pyro's case, they're being destroyed by these weapons that they can't do anything against.
Yeah, the back burner is, I think, overpowered.
Yeah,
I really do. I think
heard it's
the
savage.
Next patch they put in, it's probably going to get rebalanced. It should. I mean, it's not game-breaking, but it's pretty ridiculous. It's very, very, very powerful.
And, I mean, when the Heavy gets its weapons, whatever they're going to be, that could really throw things off, because it's already an almost indestructible class with a medic attached.
God knows, I disagree. I've killed plenty of Heavies with medics on them.
It's not. If it's a well played heavy medic combo, it can be a hard thing to take out. And if they get
But you could say that with almost any class. You know, I think the classes as the game originally shipped were very, very well balanced.
I think the Heavy class could really turn, you know, unbalanced if they give it something like the back burner.
Well, it could. I mean, if the weapons are out of control, then any of these classes could.
Yeah, I think that case and probably maybe Demo would probably has the highest possibility of just turning insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly any of these updates lead you to wonder what they're going to do with the rest of them. And I can only hope that they learn from their mistakes as they go, because they're doing each class sequentially. And they did learn for the Pyro, they learned that the achievements need to be easier and that you need to unlock the weapons with fewer achievements.
See, why didn't they change...
So they've done a good job with that.
Why didn't they go back and retroactively change the medic situation, though? Because the medic situation is still... You know what it is. It is what it is.
I think they should, but the problem is it kind of degrades the achievements that people already have gotten. So I think what they should do for the medic is add, say, 10 new achievements that are fairly easy to get, and let them count towards the totals that you need to unlock those weapons. And they can still do that. That seems fairly easy to do. So I'm still hoping that they're going to do that. I mean, when they see that 50% of the players have all the pyro weapons and only 3% of the players have all the medic weapons, that should tell them something.
But, you know,
because that's probably how it's going to shake out.
It took about a month and a half between medic and pyro?
Yeah.
There's still, what, like 6 classes left?
Yeah, 7.
Seven.
There's
so
9
it's,
in total.
So it's going to be about a year before they get all these out.
Yeah, but that's okay. You know, I don't really have a problem with that. I hear people complaining about it, but it's like, look, what other company gives you a year's worth of really interesting updates that will make you want to go back and play the game every single time they add it? And it's all free.
But see, the thing
is, you don't get that kind of support.
I think that's
going to
leave
anybody.
One class like horribly underpowered if these all come out the same way. Like, if they intend to balance the game by adding new weapons to the other classes instead of nerfing the ones that they already put in that were unbalanced, if you play one class, whatever the last one is, you're basically screwed for the next year.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think the new weapons are that overpowered.
But if 8 of the 9 classes have the new weapons, and you're the 9th class that doesn't, you're going to get...
It's going to suck.
You're going to get annihilated.
What I'm hoping is that they start to do 2 at a time, and that'll kind of prevent that situation.
It's Valve. We'll be lucky if they leak out another one this year.
Yeah. I think we've put the other 2 guys to sleep, James.
What?
Probably.
What? Sorry.
Oh, hi. Hi.
Hey. Good morning.
Okay. That was TF2. This isn't really
that?
A game, but I did install... That was his attempt at snoring.
Oh.
I did install... I finally upgraded Winamp, and I've been using it to convert some file formats lately. And when I installed the new version, I noticed that it has something called Winamp Remote now, which is actually run through Orb. Do you guys remember when there were these news stories about this service, this online service called Orb, that would let you stream your music files through your Wii?
Yeah.
Yes.
Internet
yeah,
browser.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. Well, this is basically the same thing, except they've teamed up with Winamp, and I don't know what improvements that has made to it, but it got me to finally try it, because I already use Winamp, so I figured I might as well check this out. And so I installed it, and so far I did try it on a computer at school, and it works great through another computer. I tried it on Wii last night, and I couldn't get it to ever load my music because I think it was because I was running BitTorrent and I have crappy upload speed. So I'm going to try it again this week without anything crazy running on my computer and see if I can get it to work fairly fluidly on the Wii. But it did definitely load up my music library and find that stuff pretty quickly. And there's on my, as far as my computer was concerned, there was no setup. I was afraid I was going to have to kind of create a new library and drag all these MP3s over to it, and these will be the ones that you can access remotely. But it actually just automatically searches for all of your music files. So it's pretty simple as far as that goes. So I'm looking forward to trying that. I thought it would be convenient since I don't own like a good stereo system in my apartment. So like if I have people over, we're not playing games, we just want to sit around, talk, eat, play cards or whatever, this might be a nice way to get some good music over instead of loading up the photo channel or Excitetruck.
I think you should play all your music through Excitetruck.
Yeah.
Which we established last week is better than Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yep.
It may be. I haven't played Metal Gear. John Lindemann, you've played Metal Gear. What is your new
Did
you beat it?
No, yet? I haven't beat it yet. I've actually, I actually put some time in over the weekend on it, and that game is just, it's really cool. I mean, it's really, really impressive. Right now, I'm at the point where, I mean, like the other games, you have the bosses, you know, the four or five bosses that you have to get through, you know, each of them with their own kind of quirky personality. And right now, I'm fighting the kind of new equivalent of Psycho Mantis. And the funniest thing about that boss encounter, this isn't a spoiler by any means, really, but it just shows you the kind of, you know, sense of humor that I think, you know, Kojima infuses his games with, you know, aside from, you know, fart humor and, you know, poop humor, which seems to be in all of his games. But the funniest thing about it is, if you can recall in the original Metal Gear Solid, when you were fighting Psycho Mantis, the way that you beat Psycho Mantis was you had to plug in Controller 2, and then you could control Snake and you could beat him, because he would read, the idea was that he would read whatever you did on Controller 1. So once you...
Yeah, he was reading your mind.
Yeah, that was the idea.
Is it impossible to beat him without changing your controller?
I wondered about that, because what if you only had one controller?
I was hesitant to do it when I played through Twin Snakes. I had always heard that was the way you beat him, but I was kind of hesitant because I felt like it was abusing an exploit. Not an exploit. Obviously, it was designed to be done that way, but I thought that was the easy way, and I wondered if there was like a more legitimate way to beat him that I wasn't even trying. But the strategy guide that I had said, just move your controller over.
I think he basically prevents any of your attacks from doing any damage.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the game did have, especially the first game, had some weird crap like that. Like,
There's also radio frequency that you have to get off the back of the game box.
Look at the back of the game box. I was like, what the hell?
Which sucks if you rented
it. Yeah, exactly.
or if you bought a used copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of thing goes all the way back to, like, Star Tropics with the note you have to dip in the water. It's kind of an age-old thing, but I think it really shocked people in 98 that a game would still do that kind of gimmicky shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, like, I remember people used to hate on Star Tropics for that. You know, they would get pissed off. It's like, you know, my mom threw that letter away when I bought the game. And it seems like Metal Gear is so beloved for doing, you know, weird fourth wall breaking stuff like that.
Or how does that you played Star Tropics on the Virtual Console, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that get handled?
Oh yeah, I've mentioned this before, James. You weren't listening. It's in the operations guide.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
It's actually really cool. There's a little animation of a piece of paper dipping into water and then the number shows up.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Well, what they did was they actually reprinted the letter in the operations guide. So, like, you know, you go to the menu in the operations guide, and one of the chapters in the menu is Dr. J's letter.
Ah.
Yeah, so you go there, and it reads it verbatim, just like it looks pretty much like the letter did when you got the game, and then at the bottom there's a little icon, you click on it, and then it shows you the secret message.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm fighting this clone of Psycho Mantis before it gets derailed again. I'll just finish my story. And the cool thing is, if you actually, you know, take a second DualShock controller and hook it up to your PS3, you get right away you get a call from Otacon, and he says, you know, that worked in the last game, but it's just not going to work in this game. And so it's pretty cool. So the game actually sees that you're trying to do the same thing that you did in Metal Gear Solid, and it says, sorry, I recognize what you're trying to do, but you're not going to get it done in this game. So
now, John, does this boss recognize the difference of whether you're playing with a DualShock 3 or a 6-axis?
No.
Because that seems like the kind of thing Kojima would put in there. If you're playing with the old PS3 controller and he makes fun of you or something, or if he's trying to send you like Morse code through the vibrations in the controller, and then he's like, oh yeah, you can't feel the rumble, can
yeah.
you? That seems like the kind of thing he would put
yeah, see,
in
there.
I
looked for stuff like that, and there's nothing like that. Like, the idea with this guy is that he controls you by having you on strings, right? And so you can see little strings attached to Snake when he's walking around. And so I thought of a whole bunch of things, and none of these worked, but I thought that any of them would have been really cool. I thought that, you know, the same kind of thing that you did in the first one, except on the PS3, you know, like the 360, you can turn off, everything's wireless, so you can turn off your wireless controller. And I thought that maybe if you turned off the wireless controller for controller port 1, you know, you'd be able to use controller port 2. You know, the boss would say, I can't see your controls anymore or whatever, and then you'd be able to go over to controller 2 and use it. That didn't work. I tried plugging it into the USB ports on the front of the PS3 to control it, to try to maybe bypass it, and that didn't work. So I think actually this boss, I think you kind of have to beat him in a more conventional manner. So there's no real trickery like that I can see.
The original Psycho Mantis had that weird where he read your memory card too and mocked what game choices you had.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine what Kojima would do with a Metal Gear Solid on Wii?
Yeah.
Between, the all the crazy onboard memory stuff, he could, like, make fun of the weather in your hometown.
Yeah.
He could read MP3, you know, like, make fun of MP3s off your SD card or something like that. You know, there's all kinds of weird stuff they could do with the nunchuck or the classic controller. I don't know. I think he could have a lot of fun with that.
He could mock you for having completed the Subspace Emissary.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be great. Yeah, there would definitely be some kind of weird connectivity with Smash Brothers, since Snake is in that game. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It could still happen, you know? I mean, Kojima, it sounds like he's not interested in continuing with the main series of Metal Gear Solid. I mean, I think Konami is going to continue it, but I don't think Kojima is going to be involved anymore. It sounds like he's really done with that. But that doesn't mean he can't do some kind of side project on a different system. And we
you
know
mean,
that
like,
he's probably
project
working on a Wii
S?
Game.
Yeah. No.
Right. People think that's Snatcher, but maybe it's Project Snake.
Maybe.
Well, Snatcher...
Maybe it's Solid Snake. Maybe it's Snake's Revenge, too.
Did you realize that Snatcher has references to Metal Gear franchise, right?
Oh, I'm sure it does.
No,
yeah.
I mean
so does Zone Avengers.
It's considered part of, like, a subpart of the Metal Gear franchise, because the entire story, you're followed around by, like, a robot helper that's referred to as a Metal Gear.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shit, if Kojima made, like, a new... If he made Zone Avengers 3 for Wii, I would shit my pants.
Well, that's already announced with PS3, I thought, so...
No, it's not. It's not been announced at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've never played any of the Zone of the Enders games, so... I mean,
the first one is, I think it's better than people give it credit for. Everybody talks about it as like an afterthought. You know, people bought it just so they could get the MGS2 demo, mm-hmm. which incidentally was the best part of MGS2, and everything beyond the demo is not actually worth playing, in my opinion. But anyway, I remember we rented Zone Avengers so we could play the demo, but I actually ended up playing through all of Zone Avengers and thought it was a pretty good game. And then Zone Avengers 2 came out, and I rented that, and it blows away the first one. I mean, Zone Avengers 2 is one of the best games for PS2. It's amazing. So I would absolutely love to see a third game in that series, but
yeah, who knows
if they'll actually do
but,
it. All right, well, John, did you play anything other than
Metal Gear? Actually, I picked up Castle...
Spiderwick Chronicles?
No, my friend. I picked up Castle Shikigami 3 just for kicks.
Oh, the shooter, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I did. And
wow.
Yeah,
is that really good? And, I want to know. It's the kind of thing
well,
I could get into.
It's, that's the thing. It's I would classify it as kind of a B-level shooter. It's... If you do not like anime, do not get this game because it is as anime. It's like a blend between Trauma Center and like kind of a poor man's Ikaruga. That's how I would describe it. It's like, I mean, every
how much did you pay for this?
It was way too much. I mean, I think I paid.
It was really? Like
it was like $27 on Amazon. So, but was,
oh, that's not that
no.
bad. I thought you were gonna say it was full price $50.
Oh hell
game.
No! I mean, I, that's the thing. It's like okay, I would recommend okay. if you're gonna buy it, I would honestly wait until it's $20. I think that's a reasonable price
yeah.
for it. But it's yeah. I mean, it's I mean, there's some very cheesy voice acting in it. The good things about it, there's a whole bunch of characters in it. I think you can choose from. I think 10 different characters, and each of them has like their own kind of like voiceover story sort of thing, and they have their own kind of interaction with each boss. I've never seen the anime. I'm assuming this is based on some crazy anime, so I don't know what the hell is going on with anything most of the time. but
that's what I've always thought. Bullet hell shooters needed is yeah, story. I mean, what?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Well, it's only a shooter. I mean.
Exactly.
The story can't be that good.
I know. Well, that's the thing.
I think Gradius 5 has the perfect amount of story.
Never played that.
Yeah, I played like the first.
Oh shit, dude! If you like these shooters,
yeah,
you gotta pick up Gradius 5.
That's the one.
It's
that
good.
Is actually the one game that's made me most strongly consider getting a PS2 out of any game on the system. Is Gradius
yeah.
5.
You know,
I
own it, and it's really John. I could let you. I could send it to you.
Actually, you know what?
I mean, Treasure Maiden.
I probably have it. I probably do. Somewhere in my friggin'.
You probably have it?
Seriously. Dude, I have. Well, dude, you know
I played
many games
the
I have?
The played the first three levels on a friend's copy, and anyway, it seemed absolutely brilliant. I loved all of it. Yeah, I mean.
The game is genius, really.
Yeah, I can.
It's
I can
amazing.
Tell you, I have
it also has fantastic co-op mode.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that game is definitely something to get a PS2 for me. I just never got around to doing it.
Yeah, Gradius 5 is basically. Horizontal Ikaruga and not as hard.
Yeah, see,
yeah.
That's the one.
Okay,
that's,
it's
that pretty and it's that deep and complicated and engrossing. And,
but I think
but
it's less intimidating,
you know, it's
isn't it? Because think about Ikaruga with the two color system and the combos, and it's a little more sort of military training simulator like level of
right,
insanity.
Yeah.
That,
like, who needs flash focus when you can get Ikaruga?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, that's eyesight training right there.
Yeah,
I don't know. Ikaruga might destroy
that's
your
reflex
eyesight
training,
train
not eyesight training.
Yeah, really.
With both.
Well, dude, you should
both.
Check out flash focus. It's pretty much reflex training.
Oh.
It has very little to do with eyesight.
Well, then they missed their.
Yeah.
They missed their calling
that
it eyesight training.
He's saying that it might not actually be quite as ruthlessly beneficial for your eyesight as they were marketing it to be. That is,
flash focus?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Unbelievable.
I wrote that in my review. I'm like, I don't think this would actually improve your eyesight, but it's kind of fun.
What did they call it in Europe? Did they actually call it flash focus?
They called it sight training. Of course they did.
Yes!
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's just like Brain
you.
Age isn't going to make you smarter. Brain Age, the only thing Brain Age trains you to do is play Brain Age.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. It doesn't actually make
that's,
you smarter.
See,
it doesn't
see, that's
make
the thing
you...
I think they should reconcile the American name, Brain Age, and the British name, Brain Training, to make Brain Age Training. Therefore, it would actually be descriptively accurate.
That but, would be an accurate name.
Yeah.
But
yes,
it's also,
Brain Age Training.
But it's
like
also
that.
Training you to play Brain Age 2.
Yeah.
So they'd have to
no,
get in there.
No, we should put
the
addendum. Brain Age 1 training. Apparently trains people to buy Brain Age 2.
Oh, okay.
Cause the
well, I think John good. Was talking about a shmup.
Yeah.
So
actually,
how,
yeah,
is,
I
how
can,
does it play, though? I mean, forgetting the frippery, the anime, whatever. I mean, I could care less about that. What's the core gameplay? Is there anything interesting going on?
Yeah,
or is
well,
it just
actually.
Very standard bullet hell stuff.
Actually, there's. the one cool thing about it that I thought was kind of novel is that you're the closer that you get to enemy shots, the more powerful your shots become. So
I think there's a similar dynamic in Bangoyo. I have not played the original Bangoyo, but I've heard that you certainly, or at least your score's bigger or something like that. It's kind of a risk-reward thing. That's cool.
So they're basically encouraging you to shoot point blank?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They encourage you to get as close to the enemy like fire as you can, because once you get close to enemy fire, you start to, you know, you get more powerful guns just for a minute. I mean, you know, as you get closer to them, you can see your guns switch from blue to red and they're more powerful. But then when you move away from them, they're back to blue again. So
That
definitely sounds like Bangoyo. I think they did it back in the N64 version. They used that. I don't know whether anybody did it before that as well, but
yeah. And there's also, you can also play two player cooperative as well. So yeah, so it's pretty good.
Oh, that's always good.
It's pretty good.
So have you gotten an idea of how long the game is? Because that's always an issue with these shoot 'em ups.
That I don't know yet. The one thing I will say, though, is...
Okay. Well, you haven't played all the way through it yet, so I guess that's
a good
sign.
Played all the way through it yet. The one thing I will say about it, though, just speaking of, you know, how tough, like, Ikaruga is the fact that there is something to be said. It was kind of nice actually sitting down to a shooter where I didn't just get absolutely blown off the map within, you know, 10 seconds of starting the game. You know, like,
not interested anymore.
I mean, normal has four continues you start out with, and you know, it's a fairly, you know, leisurely kind of pace. I mean, there's a lot going on, but it's not like Ikaruga where it's like you're just constantly pounded. So you can keep going for a little while until you finally succumb. Mm. But it's good. I'm pretty pleased with it. So,
cool.
And I can confirm that I have Gradius 5. I checked my library, confirmed with my people that I do have Gradius 5.
Well, do you have a backwards compatible
PS3? Oh, yes,
PS3?
I do, my friend.
Okay, well, make sure you check that out. You can tell us about next week.
Mm. We'll do.
Yeah, it's great. So, Greg, I believe you are going to wrap up.
Yes, well, if you'll indulge me before I get on to...
I will always
If you'll indulge me before I get on to what I played this week. This podcast will probably be going out round about the time that Smash Brothers finally comes out in Europe and Australia.
Oh, my God.
You can eat again.
Last count.
I kind of assumed it was already
I
just hadn't put any.
I wondered how you might react to that, or whether you'd be sort of like, oh, it's coming out already, or you know.
I thought it was already out and it just passed
I mean,
the game has completely fallen off my radar.
You got screwed over that bad?
Say,
wow.
Dude, I quit playing Smash Brothers like 2 months ago.
You see, though,
I'm over it. I'm so over it.
I went over with my car like at least a week ago. Seriously, where have you been?
No, I'm completely... I will never be over Smash Bros. Let's put it this way. I mean, I've been playing Smash Bros. Almost continuously since 99, basically.
Holy crap.
Because it just went from N64 to Melee, and then Melee to Brawl.
Well, I mean, you must have a good group.
Well,
people,
I mean,
this
kind of fluctuated with who I can play with over the years, but generally I've been able to find people, you know, to play with on some sort of semi-regular basis to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally understand that. Like, when I live with my old roommate, Taylor, we played Smash Brothers Melee for probably 2 years almost every day, and that was 2 years after it came out.
Yeah.
So, I live alone now, and I don't have many friends who play games, but the ones who do don't seem very interested in Smash Brothers. Mm. Or if they are, and this, I kind of have thought about writing about this or talking about it on the show before, but you know, one thing that really bothers me is when you get like a competitive game, like a fighting game or a racing game or something like that, and you bring your friends over and you show it to them and you want them to get interested so that they'll get good at it, but it feels like you're just kind of letting them win, or you're just sitting there watching them struggle at it, and it's not really fun. It's like, I want to play these games with people who are already pretty good at it, who will challenge me. It's like Smash Brothers, unless TYP comes over to go skiing, I don't have anybody I can play Smash Brothers with who's good at it.
For me, I think...
And it's not fun unless I might lose.
I agree. I think there's definitely that element to it, but I mean, I've always enjoyed Smash Brothers, and I think some people can as well.
it, especially the way I kind of play it, is the, as you've kind of mentioned yourself, is the comedy element of it, the comedy game, you know, more than the competitive game. That it's just so wild.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I'm not attorney guy. I'm just I don't want to feel like I'm just piddling around over in the corner while this other guy goes to get the smash ball.
For me, it's always been a case of, like, you know, when I've played games, say, with people who are equally experienced or whatever, you know, I can have rounds where I do absolutely awful, but I can enjoy it, because sometimes it's just, you know, if you get one outrageous item kill, it was all worth it. And I mean, some of that stuff in Brawl is really great. Like, I think the soccer ball might be the best new item other than the smash ball, because the stuff that happens with that is insane.
It's pretty unpredictable. I think the physics are total
shit. Well, that's what's brilliant
about
it.
So, like, you basically never know where it's
going
to go.
It's mental. One of my favourite kills ever, I was just like, the soccer ball induces irrational feelings in me. I just have to do something with it.
Yeah.
I don't care if it kills me or whatever. I'm going to try and kill someone with it.
Well, you're British. Of course you love a soccer ball. I mean, come on, man.
Well, there's always the possibility,
almost like a hooligan,
that you'll kill yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter whether it's a risk to myself. It's all about I sort of suffer for my comedy in this regard. So like the one time I just saw it with Yoshi, and I just thought, sod it, I'll throw an egg at it, see what happens. And the egg hit it, and then it went into a bumper and bounced off the bumper and caught someone miles up in the air, and it just went wonk straight off. And it's just like, I went mental. I was like, that is brilliant. That is the best thing I've ever seen. It's just like that.
It totally wasn't what
you
intended.
And the thing is, I'll just hit it and see what happens. And it's like, wow, that was almost like Goldberg. It was just awesome. It's like that kind of. And I think anyone can enjoy that. So that's the thing. I think if you try to get people to enjoy Smash Brothers, don't, you know, just have fun with it rather than try and beat them up. Like, so you aren't really letting them win. It's more like that's how you want to play it. You know, you want to have fun with it. So it's not you're letting them win, it's just you're doing what you want to do by bucking around. I mean,
know what you mean. It's not that I want to be super competitive. I just really cannot stand playing any game with someone who is that much worse.
Yeah, it's not fun.
See, I enjoy it.
So then
I cannot enjoy it. I feel guilty about it, or it's boring, or for whatever reason, I just don't like playing games. I mean, I'm not trying to be a snob here. I don't want to win that easily every time.
Yeah.
And it feels like when I show people Smash Brothers, they don't like it enough to want to get good at it. You know, they'll play it to basically begrudge me or whatever, but, you know, indulge me in it. But they don't really want to play it.
I mean, it's still an issue, don't get me wrong. I just think Smash Brothers more than a lot. I think racing games are really bad for that. I mean, it just if you're not on some sort of same, it just is abysmal. No matter how many items you want to throw at the problem, it doesn't really fix it. But I think Smash Brothers just at least has the potential to, you could enjoy it when doing badly. That's what I think is the one good thing, because sometimes it's so mental, it's just so bizarre. And I mean, I think Brawl probably more than the others, with the sort of craziness of the Smash Ball and some of the other items and the stages, I think probably does it the best. But I mean, I just love Smash Brothers a lot. I mean, if they'd never released another one, I'd probably still be trying to get people to pick up the N64 controller, because I love the core game that much.
Now, Johnny, where do you think that lack of interest comes from? Is there like some common theme amongst the people that don't want to play?
Yeah, I think most people are intimidated by it, and it's funny because Smash Brothers should not be an intimidating
game. Yeah,
I mean, you play it with two buttons, maybe three if you include the shield, and, you know, that's what, when I get people to do this, they're like, I don't really do fighting games. I'm like, no, it's okay. The controls are really easy. There's depth there, but you can pick it up and do pretty well, you know, right off the bat. And usually I can get them to try it, but the speed of the game is such a it's such a hurdle. Because, honestly, and I had this problem with Melee when I first started it, but the game is so fast that, at least in 4-player, it's just so chaotic that you have to train yourself to learn to follow it. It's like watching American football. When you first go to it, you're like, what are these people? What, you know, it looks like chaos.
Yeah, especially when it zooms out.
It takes
and all
practice
that kind of stuff.
To train your eyes and to
or if you're
you
watching
have to
the
learn
Falcons.
To follow the ball.
Yeah.
You have to learn to focus on the important parts and ignore the unimportant parts. You have to learn not to be distracted by the background.
And that's more of an issue with Brawl, I think, probably distracted by the background.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see that.
Right. I don't think the backgrounds are a huge problem, but I think it's relatively similar to Melee. I had plenty of people I tried to get to play Melee, and they would play it with me for an hour, and then they were never really interested in playing it again. And it's that they had a hard time keeping their eye on their character.
Well, there are some levels in Brawl that are awful about that. The New Pork City, for example, is just unplayable.
It's just so big.
It's just so zoomed out.
Yeah, it's too big. It is. If you have two players that are the same character, it's almost impossible to tell who's who.
Well, I mean, you should be playing with names on. But even then, it's just kind of difficult to figure out where the other...
And if you're...
For me, the problem is not keeping up with which character is mine. It's at a glance knowing where the
and
other
also,
person is. And you can't really do that because the character is so small, you can't just... In your peripheral vision is not accurate enough to know where the other
person
is.
I also think that if you're brand new to that game and somebody just drops you into it, you don't know what you should be looking at. You know what I mean? You don't know what's important and what's not.
You don't know which elements are important and which ones aren't.
You have no idea.
See, I think that's where the single player in that game, not Subspace Emissary, but just the general single player, has its value in that, you know, it starts off pretty simple and you can get a feel for what's going on. It doesn't tend to start you at the big stages early on.
Yeah.
It tends to put you in a smaller stage against a weaker opponent. It goes a little bit slower, and you can sort of work your way up through that until you get to Master Hand the first time and swear at your game.
Yeah, but it's also not fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
see, I don't think that's the problem. As a training
mode,
I agree, it's toned down. It makes more sense, but it's also not really entertaining.
And
that's why I don't give somebody classic mode when I'm trying to get them to play for the first time, because I think they're going to hate
this. That's more for
it's
someone who
fun.
Was buying the game themselves who hadn't played it before, but for people that are coming over... Just to play a new copy, it's a bit more of an issue. But
that's the problem with Smash Brothers as a party game, is that the barrier to entry is seemingly so high. It's a world apart from Mario
and
Party.
Also, most pertinently of all Wii Sports, you know, that's the big sort of difference there is, and therefore, you know, perhaps with the Wii in general in terms of the kind of multiplayer. Because, I mean, obviously going back to the N64, I mean, N64 was big for four-player multiplayer, gathering around the console. Mario Party, GoldenEye Perfect Dark, and Smash Brothers, I mean, you know, it was pretty sort of unprecedented at the time to have that kind of, you know, and Mario Kart 64... I guess with Wii, what you've got with Wii Sports is it's sort of, you know, it's capitalizing on the same thing, but it's broadening it out much further so that, you know, really it's not just people who also own an N64 but maybe not that game, or they owned a PS1 or whatever, come over
and
play
with
you. It's like anybody.
Let me suggest another thing. Another big difference between Wii Sports and Mario Party and these other games is that Wii Sports and Mario Party, you don't really have all four people playing at the same time. I mean, there are a few mini games in Mario Party where you might find that, but more often, usually those are so simple that it's not possible to be intimidated. Wii Sports doesn't even have a four-player mode except in tennis. Mm-hmm. And honestly, four-player tennis, it is confusing. I've had people do that, and they seem to be, you know, which one am I? I can't remember if I'm on the top or the bottom. You know, you see the ball just go right by them, and they don't even swing at it because they're looking at other parts of the screen. And I think for people who aren't pretty serious gamers, four-player on the screen at the same time at such a Smash Brothers is pretty difficult to follow, just because they lack the visual acuity and they don't know enough about how the game is played to keep up with what's going on. That's something Europeans can look forward to.
Yeah,
when this goes out.
But I was thinking I was thinking about this. I think Nintendo of Europe dropped the ball here. Because they've had all this... It's not for the reasons you think. They've had all these months, you know, with localizing and everything. You look at the sales figures, which are still astonishingly strong for Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. It's still regularly in the top 10 in Britain.
So are you saying they should stop making that game?
I think they should have renamed... In light of that, they should have named this Mario and Sonic Beat the Shit Out of Each Other. And then... maybe they could have piggybacked onto that success, because it's not going to sell as well. Brawl will not sell as well as it. It's unbelievable.
Greg Leahy, marketing executive.
Yeah. What if they renamed Mario and Sonic at the Olympics instead and renamed it Mario and Sonic Smash Brothers Training? Because I think then it would sell
you don't
even better.
You don't want to change anything about that. What that's done from a commercial perspective is absolutely astonishing, the staying power. I guess it's because it's like managed to hitch its wagon to Wii Sports, kind of. And you know, the sort of the character crossover just kind of embellishes it a bit, and it's kind of like, oh, that's the next progression, you know, kind of what they've talked about with was it Super Sluggers, you know, the bridge thing, although it's a lot closer to Wii Sports than in some ways, I guess, in terms of, because it is a collection of games rather than one game, one sport. But yeah, it just seems like the Brawl is never going to do as good a business as that. And even though it's got even though it's a giant character crossover game, but it just won't.
Carnival Games is the only game that'll do as well as that.
Carnival Games has sold pretty well in Europe. It's a similar kind of thing, sort of slow burn, you know, gradually but consistently, sort of selling quite well.
Right.
Up to a high
level. All right, I have a question for you guys. Considering the massive delay for Europe to get Smash Brothers, do you think there's any possibility that they have improved the online code?
No.
Well, and this brings me to...
I don't either, but that would be a pretty amazing surprise.
I strongly doubt that.
They can kiss my ass.
It's
going to
break the online servers even more.
I mean, we'll be interested in terms of... It will be interesting in terms of maybe trying to play some games that are very close together, as they would be, you know, in Britain, the sort of density of the players, but it'll probably still be bad.
Kiss my ass.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've played people who were literally, you know, across campus, and it was god-awful.
Really? That's terrible. Well, I mean, you have...
We were even on the same network, and it was a high-speed network that's supposed to be devoted to research purposes.
Yeah, I think it has very little to do with the geographic distance, which is funny because that's what Sakurai was really worried about when he first talked about this on the blog. I've played people in Japan matches that were much smoother than playing TYP in LA. I've played matches with Greg in England that were much smoother than playing with people here in Colorado.
I've played matches with nobody. It still doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. But this kind of brings me on to the next thing, which was that, funnily enough, just about last week, so just around about 2 weeks before Brawl came out, we had the new firmware update, which kills the freeloader. We all knew it was going to happen. It's been on the on the slate for a little while now, and it's finally happened. At this point, it is not at all imperative to actually update, because you can still get to the Wii Shop channel and stuff like that.
Oh man, I don't know how it was in Europe, Greg, but the firmware update my light was glowing when I got back from the festival, and so I look at the message from Nintendo, and it says, "This version of the firmware adds the feature that you can move Miis from the plaza to the parade or something."
Yeah. I think that's a brilliant...
I was like, thank God, 2 years after the Wii launch, they finally fixed that.
I think that was a wonderful...
I knew when I read that, what this firmware update really is fuck the freeloader.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know to what extent this was deliberately directed against the freeloader, or more against the hack stuff, the homebrew
stuff. It did... fixed the Zelda Twilight Princess thing for about 4.5 hours.
I think it was a lot about that, and I think that that was made the freeloader issue because it uses an exploit that can also be used by people that have hacked their machines to do nefarious things with it. It may have been collateral damage simply, although I hear they're already pretty much working around it. The hackers.
Yeah.
So it's just the freeloader.
That's what they do. So it sounds like the freeloader was just collateral damage.
Yeah, and that's kind of sad. But I mean, I knew it was going to happen. I'd probably be able to avoid updating for a while longer, and then at some point something will force me to make the switch.
Here's a question. What'll happen when you put your PAL version of the game into your Wii?
Well, I think the first thing that will happen, the PAL version of Smash Bros., the first thing that's happened, if you update the firmware, what will happen apparently is it goes in, it deletes file saves that aren't supposed to be on there, hypothetically. It deletes homebrew stuff, but I haven't got confirmation of this, but it may well delete your Smash Bros. Foreign file.
That's brutal.
Well, that's the thing. Greg's not going to be able to play the PAL version of Smash Bros. Without updating the firmware, because
I know.
Sure that's, when you put puts the disc in, the first thing it's going to say is, you have to update your firmware.
Supposedly the freeloader has the capacity to, if you sort of put it in twice with a new PAL game, to actually circumvent the needs to put something that claims that this was the way it was going to be in subset future-proof, was that you could avoid online updates, and then for the disc ones, you had this alternate boot method that was going to, this sort of filter it out somehow so that it would get the game to run but without installing the new firmware that would block it. We don't know how true that is yet. Presumably Smash Brothers will test it.
That'll only work up until the point where a game comes out that needs any firmware updates.
Yeah, like
if it really needs some update for the game.
If it really, really needs it rather than just it demands you do it, I assume that would
Right.
Yeah, supposedly, like Metroid Prime 3, installed the firmware update that one installed supposedly was actually required in order to send your tokens to other people over WeConnect 24 and stuff like that. I mean, so if you had been able to circumvent the firmware update for that, would the game have crashed?
These are questions we don't know the answer to yet, I suppose.
Right, I mean, it's pretty
interesting. Well, I would say that the interesting thing for you to try would be, if you have an SD card, can you move your Smash Brothers
save?
That's
the heartbreaking thing. You can't. I mean, for the...
You
remember, because we mentioned this before, we were talking about the fact that do online Wii games allow you to move your... Because there was that issue. Do you remember when the problem with Smash Brothers, when it first went up and people didn't have certain options, and they said, oh, it's okay, just erase your file, and then start again with this, like, well, that wouldn't have been so bad if you could have just copied it and moved it back. So that's the thing, you wouldn't be able to do that either. So that's even worse. But, I mean, I had all these things in mind. I mean, I haven't gone mental on the challenge wall or anything like that. Because I knew this.
Yeah, I mean, you were planning to buy the PAL version.
Preparing for that eventuality, yes.
Or do you think you're going to now?
Probably, so not necessarily in the immediacy, but it will probably happen, certainly. These are things that I think most people that are into it enough to have a freeloader are perfectly aware of. And there may be a point where they come up with a new disc that will perhaps use something, perhaps work to have a different workaround that's less likely to be cataracted by cat or piracy things. At some point, so I guess we'll see. But that's the worst part, is that if you could almost hold on for that next freeloader and just copy your Smash Brothers file over and let it be deleted by the new firmware, but because you can't copy it, it has to be deleted, so you lose everything.
Well, if you could,
all right,
that's kind of sad. I was thinking I'd probably get to what I played now, very briefly, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
And I've actually been doing a lot of reading, which is to say, first of all, I played a bit of Paper Mario 1000 Year Door, courtesy of the generosity of Carly, who let me borrow the game.
And perhaps some trauma center too.
I'll get on to the next game in a minute. But first of all, Paper Mario, I'll just say I'm late to the party with the Paper Mario games. I've played the first one on Virtual Console, then I played Super Paper Mario on Wii, and now I'm playing this one. So a little out of order, although I don't think it really matters. And so far, I think it could be my favourite one. I think it sort of... I like the way it uses the graphical style. Obviously, it's a lot like the N64 one, but it's higher res and sort of a bit cleaner and everything. But I just like the way things are constructed. It's more of a sense of, like, the paper element. Like, the bosses are, like, giant papercraft things. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I don't know, Super Paper Mario is a bit... The whole sort of completely flat thing, but then the sort of very simple corridor 3D... At first it kind of looked like it was going to be really interesting. I don't know whether it ended up being quite as interesting as it did, and I kind of prefer the pop-up storybook look of the first two, and I think it looks really nice on GameCube. And it's still got all the sort of usual fourth wall breaking humour. Like, I think quite early on there was something about have you played that Fire Emblem on Game Boy Advance? It rocks my socks. I mean, what is that?
It rocks your socks is actually a reference to Rage, because you have to restart those missions over and over and over.
To avoid...
I played the Thousand Year Door on GameCube as an import title. Thinking that because the gameplay is so simple, I can probably get through the game, even though I don't read Japanese. And that, for the most part, that's true. There are a couple... There's a chapter where you're on a train and you're, like, solving a murder mystery that's virtually impossible if you can't read the text.
Don't we have, like...
It turned into...
Go ahead. Hmm?
No, I was just going to say it turned into basically trial and error. Right. I had to go through the entire train and speak to everyone twice, and then it would finally advance me to the next step. Then I had to start over and go through the whole train and talk to everybody
twice.
It must have made pressing
A over and over again all the more interesting, I'm sure.
Indeed.
Yeah. But didn't you lose something in playing it as an import game that might have been hard to quantify?
I don't think so. I kind of got the sense that the English translation was pretty boring. My concern was that it would be really funny like Mario and Luigi was on Game Boy Advance, and that I would miss out on all that humor.
Right.
But I talked to several people when the English version came out, and the consensus seemed to be that it wasn't that funny. Mm. You know, they didn't really go all that out, you know. So I didn't really feel any regret. My problem with it was that I kind of got really sick of the gameplay about halfway through the game, and it was very hard for me to keep to press on and play through the rest of it. So, there you go, Greg.
Enjoy, buddy.
It sounds like you really enjoyed it.
Well, I've enjoyed it so far, but we're only two chapters in, so whether that will wear as the game goes. I think because I probably got a bit fatigued with the original Paper Mario, because that's quite big.
It was actually a pretty long game.
It's a long game, and I just felt like it kind of got formulaic and repetitive. Every chapter seemed to be pretty much the same as the one before it. There'd be some little twist here or there, but it was basically just going through the motions. I don't really like what they do in these Paper Mario games where they basically tell you at the beginning how many chapters are in the game. And so you can kind of tell how far you are through the game.
Yeah.
And not only that, but it seems like every chapter amounts to more or less the same thing with different story.
Yeah.
And maybe because I couldn't read the text in the Japanese version, that structure to the game was just all the more exposed.
Yeah, because I think it's quite heavily leveraged.
I kind of got sick of it.
It's not as funny as the Mario and Luigi games, which I played them when they came out. So that's kind of why I've ended up going back to Paper Mario, because I did like those, and I knew the Paper Mario was similar, although I would agree they're not as funny. But they rely on charm, I think, for a lot of the in terms of the visual style, the characters, the script, and if you haven't got that there, I think it would seem a bit not the most sort of vibrant game, quite methodical and go through the motions. But
the other part of it is the battle system, because I like how much depth there is in such a limited number of options, but the fact remains there aren't that many attacks that you can do.
Yeah.
And over the course of 20 or 30 hours, I get really sick of charging up the hammer attack.
I think it's
the same hammer attack. Like you do the similar kind of stuff like, say, in the downloadable Penny Arcade Adventures game, but that game is 5 hours long.
Yeah.
So by the end of it, you haven't had time to get sick of the battle system.
I think
that's one of the big problems in especially the second Mario and Luigi game, the one for DS, is that's really a problem on there, because you're playing these same fucking mini games with the items over and over, and you have to use them 10 times in every battle. And to a lesser extent, it's a problem in the Paper Mario games. I just get sick of doing these same actions, and you have no other choice. You know, like they give you three weapons, but only one of them works on any particular enemy because of this rock, paper, scissors. So you don't even really have a choice as to what you do. Like, say what you want about Final Fantasy games, and they give you 20 spells that you never need, and every character has all these attacks that are not really necessary. But at least if you get sick of doing the same thing over and over, you have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like there's only one attack that's effective, and that's how the Mario RPG games are all structured. There's only one thing that really works. And I just don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I personally prefer the Mario and Luigi games, not just because of the script, because I got on better with the actions. I thought there was a bit less a bit less sort of so, because it's so simple in the Paper Mario ones. That's the thing. They're just so simple.
I mean, in some ways,
you might say it's more obnoxious to do something more complicated over and over again, but at least it's kind of, there's some sort of like challenge to doing it right to make sure you actually deal it.
Well, and there's more variety.
Whereas with Eli, you said pulling back the analog stick over and over again, it's not great. I got two chapters in with that, and then it was my birthday, as has been brought up. And I got Okami for Wii. I've been about 10 hours in on that now.
and I've been thoroughly enjoying it so far. I'm a big Zelda guy, so it's not really surprising that I would enjoy it in the sense that it's been proclaimed very sort of effective Zelda-ish kind of game. And the controls, I would say, have worked pretty well. I haven't had many problems with it, especially. I mean, the straight line thing, I was kind of felt like, the trigger modifier will deal with that, and it generally has. The thing I was kind of concerned about was circles. Because I'd heard some things, like, I think one of the guys said, one of yours, saying, like, oh, you know, the circles are really bad, the recognition. I really haven't seen that at all. I mean, sometimes I do a pretty terrible attempt at circles, and it's working.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
And another one that I was concerned about when I found out about it was the bomb one, because it's like a circle but then a line. And so I was thinking, oh, you know, if the circle recognition's bad, if you make it more complicated, surely it's going to be... But even that I've found to be very dependable. So...
That's good. I mean, the bomb one is the one that I had trouble with in the PS2 version.
Yeah, I could imagine you would.
Not because of the recognition, but there... The bomb one has a lot to do with the size that you draw it, and there are boss battles later in the game where you basically have to draw bombs very quickly. You don't have unlimited time to draw however you want it. I mean, it'll limit the amount of time that you have to draw these shapes, and if you don't draw the bomb big enough, or if you don't draw it in exactly the right place, and it won't hit the boss, because there is an element of dimensioning here where you go from a 3D environment to suddenly putting this 2D plane overlay over it, and you're drawing these things in 2D, and it's not always very clear where in the depth of the environment that item, for instance the bomb, will pop out. It's not a problem with a slash, but when you're drawing a bomb and it physically creates a bomb in the environment once you let go of the button, it's pretty unpredictable where that's actually going to show up in the space.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I find what helps fights. In that regard is with the Wii version at least, you can use the analog stick while it's sort of frozen to sort of shift the view a bit. So sometimes if you shift it so it's like more bird's eye, then it's more easy to think, right, well, you know, it'll definitely fall there. Whereas if you're kind of on a slant kind of perspective, that's where it's like you're done, not quite sure where it's going to show up when you draw it. Yeah. But no, I was really...
Oh, cool. I don't think I ever used that feature in the PS2 version, so maybe that would have solved
some problems. I don't know whether it was in it, obviously, even, because I never played it for comparison. But I was quite surprised at how smooth all of that was. I mean, not that there haven't been the odd misstep here and there, but as a rule, I was pretty impressed, especially with the bomb one, because I was thinking, well, this is like a combination of two bad things. And instead, it's been pretty reliable. I mean, obviously, you haven't got that deep into the game to play some of these bosses or whatever, where it's really leveraged on you doing it very well. I guess we'll see how that works out. But no, I'm really pleased with the controls so far in terms of just the fluidity of the game seems to run along pretty well. You know, I'm not sure I appreciate having the music change every time you bring up the brush. That can kind of get a little irksome and take you out of the moment sometimes. Although I like the music in general, sometimes it can feel over and over. You know, because even if you're not making mistakes, which I generally haven't been, there are frequently occasions where it's like, okay, draw this now, draw that, and you're bringing up the canvas every now and again, and that's just kind of annoying to me. I just think that's something they should have picked up on as they're playing it. Like, do we really want this cutting in routinely? Art style's great.
You're really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, the art style's wonderful. It does look very vibrant in the 480p component color and all that sort of stuff. I'd agree it looks kind of soft. It's kind of, I think it's a little more soft than some other Wii games. I could say, like, Twilight Princess was kind of soft too, I thought. Whereas Mario Galaxy seems a little sharper. So I could see that part of it.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole parchment thing's kind of, it's in there. I'm pretty sure it is, but it's very difficult to see it sometimes. So it seems like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really, like, the whole point of it happened. Was that it was really kind of obvious that, whereas, like, it's so difficult to see sometimes when you do see it, it's just like, is the display screwed up? Oh, no, that's supposed to be the parchment thing. So...
Now, John, you had a commie too, right? Did you get very far in it?
I'm still playing it.
Aren't you reviewing it?
Yeah, eventually. I mean, I'm still playing it. Obviously, I've gotten sucked into other things, but I definitely want to get back to it sometime soon because I know it is a really good game. But honestly, like, after playing Twilight Princess, kind of the whole Zelda sort of ish thing was kind of killed for me, but I definitely want to go back into it because, I mean, it is really good. I mean, it's a really good game. But it's just I haven't really been in the mood to play that type of game for a while.
Capcom released it at a pretty bad time of the year considering what else was coming out. Usually, March would seem like a good month to release a game that you want to get extra attention because there won't be anything competing with it. But this year, it turns out that there was just a shitstorm of major games that came out in those months. And so
Grand Theft Auto was a killer for sure. I mean, even though it was, you know, totally on a different, you know, console and everything. Also, the fact, Mario Kart Wii.
Well, even on Wii, that you know, there's a Mario Kart and Smash Brothers.
And for some reason, they've chosen to release it the 2 weeks before Smash Brothers in Europe as well.
Yeah.
Oh God, what a nice
synchronize it.
I just feel like they should have let those guys work on it until fall, or at least the summer when there would be a little less competition.
See, I think they
felt they would have
like
more time to polish it up and add some bonus content.
See, I think they felt like the game was already 2 years old and that any further waiting they did would just sort of like erase the good feelings people had for the game because it would sort of be forgotten.
I don't know.
They already waited so long.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly topical,
it wasn't. Right. But I think
if you're not gonna make it, it's like with Rock Band, you know? If you're not gonna bring it out at the same time, then take the time to do it right. Don't rush it out the door. There's no sense in rushing out the door. It's already that late. You might as well make it good.
See, I think,
you know?
I think we discussed it earlier with the Okami situation, that whole situation was weird.
It was pretty bad. I mean, I feel sorry for the developers. I don't know. It's ultimately Capcom's problem because, you know, they're paying for it and they're the one who have the financial risk. I just think, as it turns out, rushing the game to get it out in March or April probably was not the best idea considering the release calendar.
Yeah, and
they might as well have given the guys a little extra time.
And they're also the ones who started shipping out the new covers this week.
I guess I should look forward to getting mine in the mail even though I didn't even buy the game.
Oh.
Well, I bought it on PS2, so I still deserve my freaking box art, right?
It looks pretty
I bought it back when it was $50.
It looks pretty sweet, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I agree. So I definitely registered for that website. So
I mean,
I will look
to put in perspective how weird the goings-on were in that game, that happened. I mean,
that was the icing on the cake, wasn't it? Well, we need to wrap up new business. This has turned into quite a long show, despite my planning. So, before we end the show, I want to go over very quickly the new downloadable games that came out this week. I'll start with Virtual Console. We actually got a relatively decent week, I guess, if you like Alex Kidd. Sega Master System game, and I'm pretty sure they released a sequel to it.
Yes, they did, Johnny.
It's already
as a matter of fact.
Console.
I actually, I'm playing it right now as we speak. Yes, I do.
Oh, are you really? You're playing.
Shouldn't
the,
you be paying
Sega
attention
Master
to?
System
I'm playing
the
Sega
version?
Master System one. Because
shouldn't you be paying attention
cool.
to better
what
things?
Do you think
is,
about,
like, I mean, I like it. This was one of the games that I originally bought. I think it actually came. I think it came with the Master System.
It came with the Master System.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. And that was when I knew everything about video games, and I said that, you know, the NES wasn't as technically powerful as Sega's machine, and so Sega's going to win the console war.
You've
so
always,
as you can see,
so you thought Alex Kidd was better. than
I wouldn't say that. I would just say that I'd never played Mario.
Did you enjoy the 9-to-1 attach rate, John?
You're telling us that you've always been a techno supremacist, John. It's lived on.
Greg, I have always been a serious gamer. Always.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
But stern-facedly looking at the specs, going no.
So, John, what do you think of Alex Kidd?
It's not bad. I mean, really, I like it more for that nostalgia factor more than anything else. But
bringing endorsement from John over here.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
I can't really give it. The thing is, it really is a poor man's Mario. I mean, let's just not kid ourselves here. But it's
What Sega was going for when the game was being made too. They needed a Mario.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I like about it is the fact that it is just. You know, it's very lighthearted and very quirky. I mean, you know, you do the whole rock paper kind of thing to fight bosses. I mean, how weird is that? And that's one of those things that I just happen to like about the game. So.
Cool. Okay. Well, the other new virtual console game is Burning Fight.
Yes!
Burning Fight.
It's another addition to our stupid names category.
Shooting Spaceship. Yeah, okay, still waiting for it. Still waiting for Shooting Spaceship.
Shooting Ship.
Shooting game. Well, I looked at the one screenshot that Nintendo always provides for these virtual console games, and if you had put the words Final Fight underneath it, I wouldn't have believed it. I mean, this looks like a carbon copy of Final Fight.
This isn't,
sure,
this isn't
not as
the
good.
Final Fight. This is the Burning Fight. That probably comes before it, because obviously it's not final.
Yeah. No, I think this is a Final Fight ripoff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
But it's hardcore. And it's $9.
Good luck.
So
it's totally worth it.
I don't know. It's not one of the more well-known Neo Geo games.
Stop listening
sure.
now and go buy Burning Fight.
Yep.
Yeah. So for WiiWare, we get one game this week, but it's actually, I think, pretty good. It's been somewhat anticipated. It's Gyrostar. This is an unusual kind of shooter game from High Voltage Software. The people are making Conduit, the much hyped Conduit first-person shooter for Wii. But Gyrostar, I actually downloaded it a few minutes before the show. I've played a couple levels of it, and... it's a pretty interesting game, I think. It's sort of a cross between Audio Surf, the MP3 yeah. surfing game that you can get on Steam, which I played the demo of. I talked about it on one episode. It's kind of a cross between that and Tempest.
Interesting.
The old Tempest arcade game. So the idea is that you're on this... You could also compare it to the half-pipe levels in Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Oh, the bonus
if
thing.
If you remember that, where you're in the half-pipe and you're collecting the rings. Because there is an element of that. The funny thing is, it is a mix of all these things, because you're in this kind of half-pipe level and you're moving forward along it into the screen, and enemies come down the pipe and you shoot the enemies and you dodge their shots, but the goal of the game is actually to pick up these energy pickups that just float down. And so basically the level has a certain set length, fixed length, and if you get to the end of the level and you didn't pick up enough of these energy blobs, you'll die and it's game over. So the idea is to pick up the energy as it comes by, and so the enemies are basically there to distract you. The first level is very straightforward and kind of boring, but you can already tell that the later levels there's a lot of twisting and sloping up and down, so it becomes, you don't have as much time to see what's coming, and also the game gets faster and faster and faster as you go through the levels, so it comes down to more reflexes. It's pretty interesting. It is like Tempest in that you're kind of, you're on these certain alignments with the enemies, so it's tricky because you have to get in front of the enemy for your shots to go up and shoot it, but that also puts you in harm's way of their shots. And so you kind of want to get in front of the enemy, shoot it, and then get out of the way before its hits can, before its shots can come hit you. There you have this interesting element of a grappling hook you can shoot out to collect power-ups. So the cool thing about that is you can kind of shoot it out there, get it lined up with the power-up, and then get out of the way. So you don't have to be... You don't have to wait for the power-up to come to you, which might potentially line you up with an enemy or an enemy shot. You can kind of work your way around it. So it adds a little neat strategy, a little trick to avoid enemy shots that way. It looks good. The background is that famous photograph that Hubble Telescope took of the weird red clouds that are spewing stars out of
okay.
them.
Okay.
Yep. It's weird. I was shocked when I saw it. I was like, I mean, this is a Hubble photograph. This is a very famous photograph that Hubble took. Why is it in this game?
Because it was free.
It basically is free. I mean, they must have gotten permission from NASA to use it in a commercial product. But there you go. I mean, it is cool looking. So I think it's pretty good so far. It has 4-player support. And when I first read about it, I thought this was a totally bullshit feature. But it's the literature for the game talks about the fact that you can have one person using the Wii Remote and one person using the Nunchuck. And I thought that the game actually required both. And so it's basically like dividing the responsibilities in half. I'm like, yeah, well, you could do that with Mario Galaxy if you wanted to. I mean, you could say that anything is two-player if you let one person use each half of the controller. But actually, what it means is you only need the remote or the nunchuck to play the game. And so what this basically means is you can get four players playing the game, controlling right. four different ships with only two sets of yeah. controllers. So if you don't own four Wii remotes
and
four nunchucks, you can still get four people playing the game. So that is pretty cool.
They did that with like Micro Machines N64. Like you could just use the D-pad on the one side. The
yeah,
there was a.
You can do that on WarioWare, the original WarioWare.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
For Game Boy.
Yeah,
Game Boy Advance has a mode that you can do that where you can have two people cramming their hands around one GBA, oddly enough. But anyway, I kind of wanted to download this game, not only because I like these arcadey kind of shooter games, but also because I kind of wanted to give High Voltage Software an opportunity to prove themselves to me after I sort of gave them some flack a couple episodes ago, saying that they've never really made anything very good.
Well, they haven't, so I mean, it's fair.
They have now, yeah. I guess, with Gyrostar.
Do you think it's very good, though?
I mean,
so,
do you think it's very good?
It's... I don't know how good it is. I've just barely played it. But, I mean, it certainly looks promising. And this is kind of what WiiWare is all about. This is what I was excited about WiiWare. It gives a chance for these small developers to show what they can really do when they're not hampered by these crazy publishing deals and crappy
so
licenses.
So you're impressed, though.
But it made me go to High Voltage's website. I wanted to read more about what they've done. This website looks like it hasn't been updated since the end of 2006. And the games that they're featuring on there are like 50 Cent bulletproof.
The PSP version, I mean, not the god awful PS2 version.
Yeah, I mean some real trash. So they did the Family Guy game, which I heard was okay. But anyway, there's not even obviously not even a mention of Gyrostar on their website, which is funny because when I went to Nintendo's press site, it referred me to the High Voltage website to learn more about Gyrostar. There's nothing.
Well, you know,
on
IGN's
today,
website.
So High Voltage, update your friggin' website.
IGN's coverage of The Conduit refers you to their Conduit webpage, which is literally just a text, some text, an image, and a place for the text to sit where the text doesn't even actually fully sit on it.
Wow. Yeah, well, I guess they're just getting IGN to do it for them.
Maybe they need a webmaster.
Yeah, maybe so.
So anyway, you know, this makes me... I don't know, maybe, you know, hopeful about The Conduit. I don't know that making a first-person shooter has anything to do with this game.
Well, it does give credence to what they said, where they weren't pleased with any of their offerings either because publishers were involved from the start, which is why they're not getting a publisher now and why they're making publishers wait.
Right, on The Conduit. Yeah. I mean, they're eventually going to have to find a publisher for The Conduit. I don't think they have the resources to self-publish.
Right. They said they're not going to. They said they've got offers, but they're putting off the offers because they can afford to continue to develop the game on their own with their own vision.
Well, there is that, but also, let me tell you something about the way these things happen. What they really want to do is continue to get places like IGN to hype up the game based on smoke and mirrors, which is what they're doing so far. And basically, they want to build up some kind of community anticipation for the game, and then they can try to get a better publishing deal.
Yeah, leverage it.
And that's a fair approach. I wish them luck, but you know, let's not mask it for something that's not.
And with Gyrostar,
I say good luck to
Gyrostar's
them. And you know, if Gyrostar,
I was just going to say, Gyrostar, I think, is 700 points and 290 blocks, so it's quite big.
It's still smaller than Kokuto Fishing Master.
It's still smaller than Kokuto, but also, I think, about the same price, value-wise. Yeah, seems if you've got the space on your Wii, it sounds like, value-wise, a bit of a better buy than Kokuto.
Are you sure? Because there are five legendary fish.
I'm afraid it's got to be six. Then we'll talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I would say also following up again on the reader mail question we had about the independent studios and making Wii games and things. There is a video on the Nintendo channel. I hope it's still up there. But it was an interview with Vicarious Visions about the new Guitar Hero for DS. And they have a nice interview with Karthik Bela, the president of the company, and the producer of the game, and some other people. It's really interesting, and it gives you, I think, a lot of respect for Vicarious and the things that they do. They talk about they actually were not asked to do the DS version of Guitar Hero. They prototyped it in-house, and then they basically showed it to Activision and convinced them to allow them to create it. So it just kind of showed you, and they go through some of the prototypes and the different ideas they had for the accessory, how to make it work. It's really interesting, and I think those guys come out smelling like roses out of that video. I was really impressed with it. And it just, again, if those guys can do that kind of stuff, I really want to see what they can do with their original content. And it just makes me want to say, hey, if High Voltage can do Gyrostar and it's good, I want to see Vicarious Visions do a WiiWare game. Let them prove that they can do something original too, and then maybe they can go from there up to a big.
Yeah,
box,
I mean, you really got to think at some point you have to think that they're going to get enough of a rep that they'll just be able to buy themselves, like, buy their own freedom from Activision. Yeah,
like Bungie.
Like, yeah. I mean, essentially, they've made such a rep for themselves in the industry. I mean, obviously, they don't have that kind of, you know, a Halo franchise to hang their hats on and, you know, parade that around.
Yeah, billions of dollars.
Yeah, but I mean, man, I mean,
I think for them to establish some sort of freedom, someone else would have to come and sort of buy them away from Activision.
Yeah.
Someone who had a grander vision
for
them.
That's unlikely.
Yeah, I know.
But I do think, you know, I will say that Vicarious Visions has made a good name for themselves by making sure that their name is attached to what they do.
Good point, yeah.
That helps a lot, and you can trace that all the way back to Silicon Knights, because those guys back when the original Legacy of Kain game came out, Blood Omen, they were very proactive in making sure that their name went on the box and that their title screen or their logo showed up when you turned the game on, which at that time
their branding is really good.
And eventually they got into some lawsuits with the publisher over, you know, being paid for what they did and being recognized for what they did, because there were versions of the game that were, like, the PC version doesn't really mention Silicon Knights at all. That's the version I played of Blood Omen. And I talked to Dennis about it one time, and he said, yeah, I can't really talk about that because there were legal actions involved.
Well, you know,
I think they settled. But, yeah, I mean, so, you know, when you talk about the potential for a company like Vicarious Visions to break out and do its own thing, even though it is wholly owned studio of Activision, the ability for them to get their name out under those circumstances is really, a lot of it can be chalked up to the path that was paved by companies like Silicon Knights.
We know now publishers tend to leverage their you know, more infamous development houses as marketing assets. So
yeah,
now
should.
It's almost
par
talented, for the course.
They should. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that is that. We really need to wrap up the show. That's all we had to talk about anyway. That's all I had planned. And so,
send your
welcome the crew back this week. And actually, I won't be here next week. I'm going on another trip, much less recreational than Bonnaroo. But I won't be able to do next week. So I don't know who we're gonna have subbing for me, but I've requested that they be
not be standing
somewhat less psychotic than what we had last week. Not that Stan and Carl are psychotic. I would like the end result to be less psychotic. Let me put it that way. We would love to get your reader mail. We didn't read it this week because we haven't gotten that much of it since the last time we did it. So fill up the bag, please. Fill our coffers with your interesting thoughts and questions at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can dig the podcast, as Carl
says. Yes.
You don't need to remember the address, though, because there's a handy link in the article.
What's the fun
website
in that?
So check that out and dig us. You actually only have to dig us once, because it's a dig for the entire podcast, not a particular episode. So I would really appreciate it if you did.
But hell, if you want to dig us 103 times.
Yeah. It's not a weekly commitment, let me put it that way. Of course, we love reading the reviews on iTunes, so please, you know, you can go to iTunes and search for Radio Free Nintendo and drop a line on there, and that's a great way to encourage other people to start listening to the show and share the love, which we would appreciate also, because it's free, right?
Yeah.
We should read the reviews on the air one day, like the ones that talk about Evan because they're old.
maybe we'll
because
do
some
that.
Of them are kind of funny.
I don't know if it's necessary because anybody could just go there and read them for themselves.
Yeah, I know, but they might be funnier with time cascading back.
Yeah, and us directly making fun of everything on
some
there.
Some of them are definitely amusing.
Yeah. That's essentially what I was actually going for, but
that's
I wanted
what
to
I figured.
Sort of hide it so people wouldn't be like, shit, I'm not going to make a comment now.
I figured I'd just bail you out, James.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, well, thanks to James, John, and Greg for doing the show every week, even when I can't be here. And thanks to you for listening, and I will look forward to all the rest of you, with all the rest of you, to hearing what happens on next week's
thanks.
Show. So.
Yes.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.
Later.
Bye. Bye.